the rest of the story. The words of an American combat pilot in the Pacific Theater during World War II, and I quote, "You press the trigger and death leaps forth, 4,200 projectiles a minute. Tracers bury themselves in walls and roofs. Dust springs up from yard and garden. Inside may be the emptiness or the writhing agony, which you never know because you never see it. Holes in a dirt floor, a machine gun out of action, a family wiped out. You go on as you were before, and below all is silence again. Death has passed. It is in your cockpit. You carried it in your hands. You hurled it down into those peaceful palm tops. You wiped out a squad of enemy troops. Surprised by the suddenness of your attack, you endangered your life and your plane to attack an empty and worthless native hut. You left children and wounded dying behind you. This was Charlie's war, fast, dangerous, soul-searching. He got into the fight late, made up for lost time, 50 missions, 178 hours of combat flying. He strafed enemy positions, dive-bombed enemy targets, sank ships. He was shot at by every anti-aircraft gun in New Guinea. The flak was so heavy at Rabaul that you could have got out of the plane and walked on it. He flew fighter bombers into the steepest possible target runs, flew reconnaissance so low that he would return with palm fronds in his land gear, repeatedly brought his life to within inches of over. Quote, you press the button. He later wrote these words. You press the button and death flies down. One second the bomb is hanging harmlessly in your racks, completely under your control. The next it's hurtling down through the air. Nothing in your power can revoke what you've done. The cards are dealt. If there's life where that bomb will hit, you have taken it. Yet it's still living, still breathing. The bomb is still falling. There are still seconds before it'll hit. The plane drills on. The sky has not changed above. The ground is more quiet below. Only a dot in the air between, getting smaller, so much smaller that it has now disappeared from sight. During Charlie's first kill, he was almost killed. Japanese fighter was coming at him. Charlie unleashed his 20-millimeter cannon. A hail of shells smashed into his target, and then suddenly, just before the two planes collided, they both took the same evasive action. Both pilots pulled back on the stick. The miss was so near that the air turbulence from the other plane almost knocked the sky out from under Charlie. Charlie looked over his shoulder to see the Japanese plane spin in. The ocean devoured it. Charlie was also an innovator of air combat. It was he who first demonstrated that a single-engine fighter could take off with 4,000 pounds of bombs, twice what they usually carried. It was he who first showed his comrades how to conserve fuel by increasing propeller pitch and decreasing engine RPMs. In fact, Charlie could get 750 miles out of a tank that ordinarily produced only 400. This was Charlie's war. And it was a war he should never have been fighting. For Charlie, performing maneuvers for which 30-year-old reflexes were too slow, Charlie was already in his 40s. He was not even an enlisted man. He was a civilian observer. He was flying borrowed planes without authorization. He was only a flyer from stateside having a look around. And yet he looked around for 50 missions and 178 hours of combat flying. This hero whose first aeronautical achievement, whose first achievement had been so spectacular that it eclipsed what I've just related, the incredible wartime experiences of which you have just learned. Instead, you'll remember that combat pilot, Charlie, for other things. For he was Charles Lindbergh. Now you know the rest of the story.